I'm Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. Let's return to our top story today, a historic moment, Ratko Mladic, the brutal Serbian commander during the war in Bosnia in the 1990s, found guilty of war crimes and genocide by the UN Tribunal in The Hague. It's also a moment to ask about the success of these kinds of tribunals. We heard earlier on the show from Armenka Helic. As a child, she fled the war in the Balkans. Now she serves in the British House of Lords. And Helic thinks that today's verdict shows the relevance of these international institutions, even in a time when some leaders are pulling back from them.
Yes, we are going through some, if I can say, turbulent times. But I do believe that I wouldn't give up on international institutions. I wouldn't give up on the UN, on the ICC. I wouldn't give up on NATO in particular. I wouldn't give up on the EU. These are institutions that have served us well since the end of the Cold War. If we have the confidence in who we are, what we stand for, if our moral spine is strong enough, we will see that the challenges can be temporary.
One journalist who saw the Balkan Wars firsthand is David Rode. He's now the online news director for The New Yorker. And back in 1995, he was one of the first outsiders to see the aftermath of the massacre in the Bosnian town of Srebrenica.
There was evidence of what had happened, but no one was sure of how much. So I was able to get into Serb territory around the town and actually found mass graves full of the bodies of what we now know are 7,000 men and boys who were summarily executed by Ratko Mladic's forces. So it's been, you know, too many years since that time. It was 1995. So, yes, it's delayed. But the fact that he is going to jail for life does create a sense of justice, finally, about what happened in Bosnia.
It has been 25 years since the UN Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia was set up. I mean, Mladic's trial alone has lasted 4 years. It must feel overdue for families of the victims. I mean, what did take so long?
There wasn't much urgency to arrest the commanders of Serb forces. NATO forces, American forces in 1995 after the war ended, Bill Clinton didn't want American casualties. So Mladic was able to remain free for 14 years. The tribunal itself proved more bureaucratic than affected. And so it created a sense among Bosnian Muslims that bringing Serbs to justice for these crimes wasn't a priority because, again, he was free for 14 years. And as you said, this has taken 25 years.
The Nuremberg trials, probably the most famous tribunals, those are the ones that sentenced Nazis for war crimes after World War II. How far do you think we've come in prosecuting war criminals since then?
A positive step is that virtually every one of the 100 people that this tribunal wanted to bring to justice was brought to justice or passed away. There was a stepped-up effort of arresting people through the 90s and the 2000s. A lot of economic pressure was brought on Serbia that caused Serbia itself to hand over Mladic finally. International law is much stronger. These verdicts have created an enormous historical record of what happened in the war in Bosnia, and they've created a body of law that really defines, you know, what is genocide, what is a crime against humanity, and most importantly, what is command responsibility.
A couple of things occur to me. I mean, first of all, between the lost decade and the numbers that kind of measure the success of the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, 161 indictments, 83 convictions. What will be the legacy of this tribunal?
I think that it's created a historical record of exactly, you know, how many people died in these situations. You know, the war in Bosnia was one of the first ones where rape was a tool of war. It was systematically used to terrorize. So that's a step forward. This conviction means a great deal to Bosnian Muslims that he was found guilty of genocide. Where it's failed is it has not convinced many Serbs, particularly, you know, the nationals in Bosnia and in Serbia. They just reject this tribunal. A narrative has emerged among Serbs that the tribunal is completely biased, that this is all part of an international conspiracy to vilify Serbs. You see that across countries and in the United States as well, a sort of counter-narratives emerging. A lot of it's online. And so, you know, it has created a sense of justice for Muslim victims. It has not created a sense of guilt among Serbs. It's nowhere near sort of the self-examination you saw among Germans after World War II. There's a rejection among Serbs of these rulings, and that's been one of its failures. I would just have to say it was positive. It's not achieved as much as we'd hoped, but you have these families of these, you know, 7,000 men and boys who I think do have a sense of justice. There were cheers among widows, I think, who were watching the proceedings this morning. So that's valuable.
Right.
The rule of law is slowly spreading, not as quickly, not as effectively as we wanted, but the verdict today is still a major achievement.
Also, David, not to be confused with the International Criminal Tribunal, there's the International Criminal Court, the ICC, which opened in 2002. And a lot of critics say it's not working as intended. Syria comes to mind. Why is the ICC falling short?
A lack of international will. There was strong international will to end the war in Bosnia after these killings around Srebrenica. The War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, you know, has been largely effective. You had a unique situation in Bosnia where there was sort of a weak Russia and the Serbs had no international backer. And that's how the war ended. And the War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia was formed. So the broader issue, the permanent body, the International Criminal Court, is weaker and its authority is not spreading.
So 25 years ago when the court was created, I mean, it was a different time. I'm just wondering how you see it and whether there's still kind of the will for cooperation internationally.
I think there's a dramatically different world today where there's various power centers. Russia is much more assertive, China, and there isn't this dominance that existed in terms of the U.S. and Europe after the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. So today you would just have total dismissal of, you know, narratives coming out of international bodies. You have the change in technology in the news media where anyone who wants to question a verdict coming out of any court anywhere can usually look online with a few keystrokes and have their sense of victimization justified. And, you know, there's a lot of false information out there. So it's a very different world today. You know, these kind of court proceedings have less authority.
So, David, how hopeful are you that another tribunal could even be established today for, you know, fill-in-the-blank war crime?
I'm not hopeful. I mean, I have to be honest about a sort of strong sense of isolation in the United States. The Trump administration is not a fan of international justice. You have a huge success for Vladimir Putin in Syria, intervening for a dictator in a conflict where 400,000 people have died, and Putin has crushed any effort at justice there. China is not interested in any kind of international tribunals either, so I think we're moving backwards. There's a deep sense, again, of satisfaction that this has finally happened, that Ratko Mladic has been found guilty all these years later. But in terms of other situations and in terms of looking ahead, no, I don't feel optimistic at all about international justice spreading.
You think it's the end of an era for these tribunals?
It is, but these go in cycles. I have great faith in average people. You know, it's wrong to execute 7,000 unarmed men and boys. Everyone knows that. All nationalities know that. So, you know, there was a disastrous American invasion of Iraq. The war in Afghanistan has gone on and on. So I understand the deep sense of isolationism in the United States, but I do think when war crimes are committed, when rape is a tool of war, when genocide is carried out, you know, average Americans feel it's wrong, average people all over the world. And so I think in the long term, there will be more international justice, but right now it's growing weaker.
David Rode is the online news director for The New Yorker. Thanks very much for being with us, David.
Thank you.
One more note about the Balkan Wars and the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague. It's about language. Despite the deep ethnic divisions that fueled the conflicts, the Bosnian, Serbian, and Croatian languages sound a lot alike, like dialects of a single tongue. But you wouldn't have known that from the way language was used and handled at the War Crimes Tribunal. Ellen Elias Bursach worked as a translator at the tribunal for 6 years.
Especially early in the tribunal, many of the defendants were Bosnian Serbs. And a Bosnian Serb, if asked, what language do you speak, would say Serbian. But the fact of the matter is that the way a Bosnian Serb speaks is the way all the people speak in their town. And the Muslims living in that same town would say they speak Bosnian. So when the people selecting interpreters received requests that the interpreter needed to be working into Serbian, they would find somebody working into Serbian, a professional translator into Serbian from Belgrade, and that's a different way of speaking than the way they speak in Bosnia. Plus, the victims who were testifying, the witnesses, were frightened when they heard Serbian spoken because they associated Serbian language with the atrocities they'd experienced. And so it was a delicate situation. What's interesting with all these differences and so much discussion about differences that goes on between Croatian, Bosnian, and Serbian is that there was very, very little debate in the courtroom and protest about not understanding what was being said.
That was Ellen Elias Bursach, who worked for 6 years as a translator at the War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. We'll hear a lot more on the subject of languages and dialects tomorrow on the show, courtesy of our World in Words podcast, so be sure to tune in for that.